The hub dwindled to the wrong end of a telescope. Sengupta was shouting somewhere, her voice raw and tinny and barely audible over the white noise of distant pounding surf.
She killed one of them. She killed one of her zombies, one of her people. He's not on the board. I can't find him anywhere.
There was nothing in Valerie's face but that spectral half-smile, that look of dispassionate appraisal. She didn't seem to notice Moore slipping up from behind, or Sengupta screaming headlong back into the fray with claws bared. She didn't even seem to notice her own left hand flicking back of its own accord to casually slap the pilot into the soldier. All that momentum spun impossibly on the head of a pin and redirected 180 degrees.
Fucking monster, fucking monster, fucking monster!
Sengupta shouted from across an ocean, and Brooks could only think, cats and dogs, cats and dogs. But none of that mattered. All that mattered were he and Valerie, alone, together. The way she let just enough air past her fingers to keep him awake. The way she reached out with her free hand and tapped that light, rhythmic tattoo across his temple. The things she whispered for his ears only. Intimate secrets of such vital importance, he forgot them even as she breathed them out along his cheek. Behind her, Jim Moore grabbed a cargo strap and braced his feet against the wall. Valerie didn't even bother to keep him in view.
Is it true?
He asked quietly.
Of course it's fucking true. She's a vampire. She'd kill all of...
Moore, eyes locked on Valerie, raised a palm in Sengupta's direction. Sengupta shut up, as if guillotined.
You think this matters?
There was distant amusement in Valerie's voice, as if she'd just seen a rabbit stand up on its hind legs and demand the right to vote.
You think so too, Moore began. Or...
You wouldn't have reacted,
he and Valerie finished in sync. He tried again.
Were they under formal con?
They chorused. He trailed off, an acknowledgement of futility. The vampire even matched his ellipsis without missing a beat. Sengupta fumed silently across the compartment, too smart and too damn stupid to be scared. Brooks tried to swallow, gagged as his Adam's apple caught between the vice of Valerie's thumb and forefinger.
Malawi, Valerie said quietly, and not mission critical.
Brooks swallowed again, as if there's anyone on this goddamn ship who's less mission critical than me. Maybe Moore was thinking it too. Maybe he decided to act on behalf of Daniel Brooks, the parasite that walked like a man. Or maybe he just took advantage of his adversary's distraction. Maybe it didn't have anything to do with Brooks at all. But something changed subtly in Moore's stance. His body seemed looser somehow, more relaxed, incongruously taller at the same time. Valerie was still eye to eye with Brooks, but it didn't matter. It was obvious from the way her smile widened and cracked, from the tiny click of teeth against teeth. She could see everything that mattered about Moore's face, reflected in his own. She turned, almost lazily, tossed Brooks aside like a cigarette butt. Brooks flailed across the open spine. He barely missed a figure blurring past in the opposite direction. A cargo cube caught him and slapped him back off the deck. He doubled over, coughing, while Moore and Valerie danced in fast forward. The monster's arms moved as though spun by a centrifuge. Her body rebounded off the deck and shot through empty space where Jim Moore had existed a split second before.
Fatuding Dore!
Not a shout, not even an exclamation. It didn't sound like a command. But those sounds reached into the hub from the South Pole and seemed to physically slap Valerie off target, reach right into the monster's head, and grab her by the motor nerves. She twisted in midair, landing like a jumping spider on the curve of the bulkhead, and froze there, eyes bright as halogen, mouth full of gleaming little shark teeth.
Jupio imake!
Moore rose from a defensive crouch, studied hands half raised against blows that hadn't materialized, brought them down again. Chinadu Mofegbu rose from the throat of the crown.
You can't do that,
Brooks thought, astonished. You're stuck in the hold for another 3 days.
Prothat blimsto befe.
Ofegbu's hands fluttered like a pianist's against an invisible keyboard. The light in his eyes slithered like the aurora borealis.
I don't care how smart you are. You're still made out of meat. You can't just step out of a decompression chamber.
The bicameral's blood must be fizzing in its flesh. All those bubbles out on early parole. All those gases freed from the weight of too many atmospheres. All set loose to party it up in the joints and capillaries.
One's all it'll take. One tiny bubble in the brain. A pinpoint embolism in the right spot, and you're dead. Just like that.
You're vampire, Sengupta began, before Moore preempted her with,
We have some mission-critical issues to deal with.
But there is no you anymore, is there? You're just a body part. Just a node in a network. Expendable. When the hive cuts you loose, will you get it all back? Will Chinadum Ofegbu wake up in time to die a roach's death? Will he change his mind too late? Will he have a chance to feel betrayed before he stops feeling anything at all?
Ofegbu coughed a fine red mist into the room. Blood and stars bubbled in his eyes. He began to fold at the middle. Liana Luderot climbed up in his wake, bent in on herself, one arm clenched tight to her side. With the other, she reached out, wincing, but her master was too far away. She pushed off the lip of the South Pole, floated free, caught him. Every movement took a visible toll.
If you people are through trying to kill each other,
she coughed, tried again.
Maybe someone could help me get him back to the hold before he fucking dies. Holy shit,
Brooks said, dropping back into commons. The node was back with its network. Liana was meshed and casted, and had retreated to her rack while her broken parts stitched themselves back together. Moore had already cracked open the scotch. He held out a glass. Brooks almost giggled.
Are you kidding? Now?
The colonel glanced at the other man's hands. They trembled.
Now.
Brooks took the tumbler, emptied it. Moore refilled without asking.
This can't go on, Brooks said.
It won't. It didn't.
So Chinadum stopped her. This time. And it just about killed him.
Chinadum was only the interface, and she knows that. She would have gained nothing and risked everything by attacking him.
What if she'd pulled that shit a few days ago? What if she pulls it again?
He shook his head.
Lee could have been killed. It was just dumb luck that-
We got off lightly, Moore reminded him. Compared to some.
Brooks fell silent.
She killed one of her zombies. Why did she do it?
He asked after a moment. Food? Fun?
It's a problem, the colonel admitted. Of course it's a problem.
Can't we do anything?
Not at the moment.
He took a breath.
Technically, Sengupta did attack first.
Because Valerie killed someone.
We don't know that. And even if she did, there are jurisdictional issues. She may have been within her rights, legally. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Brooks stared, speechless.
We're 100 million clicks from the nearest legitimate authority,
Moore reminded him.
Any that might happen by wouldn't look more kindly on us than on Valerie. Legalities are irrelevant out here. We just have to play the hand we're dealt. Fortunately, we're not entirely on our own. The bicamerals are at least as smart and capable as she is, if not smarter.
I'm not worried about their capabilities. I don't trust them.
Do you trust me?
Moore asked, unexpectedly. Brooks considered a moment.
Yes.
The colonel inclined his head.
Then trust them.
I trust your intentions,
Brooks amended softly.
Ah, I see.
You're too close to them, Jim.
No closer than you've been, lately.
They had their hooks into you way before I joined the party. You and Liana, the way you just accept everything.
Moore said nothing. Brooks tried again. Look, don't get me wrong. You went up against a vampire for us, and you could have been killed, and I know that. I'm grateful. But we got lucky, Jim. You're usually wrapped up in that little consensus shell you've built for yourself. And if Valerie had chosen any other time to torque out...
I'm wrapped up in that shell, Moore said levelly, dealing with a potential threat to the whole...
Uh-huh. And how many new insights have you gained, squeezing the same signals over and over again since we broke orbit?
I'm sorry if that leaves you feeling vulnerable, but your fears are unfounded. And in any case,
Moore swallowed his own dram,
planetary security has to take priority.
This isn't about planetary security, Brooks said.
Of course it is.
Bullshit. It's about your son. Moore blinked. Siri Keaton, synthesist on the Theseus mission, Brooks continued, more gently. It's not as though the crew roster was any kind of secret.
So?
Moore's voice was glassy and expressionless.
You're not as completely self-absorbed as you appear.
I'll take that as a compliment, Brooks tried.
Don't. The presence of my son on that mission doesn't change the facts on the ground. We're dealing with agents of unknown origin and vastly superior technology. It is my job.
And you're doing that job with a brain that still runs on love and kin selection, and all those other Stone Age things we seem hell-bent on cutting out of the equation. That would be enough to tear anyone apart. But it's even harder for you, isn't it? Because one of those facts on the ground is that you're the reason he was out there in the first place.
He's out there because he's the most qualified for the mission. Full stop. Anyone in my place would have made the same decision.
Sure, but we both know why he was the most qualified. Moore's face turned to granite. He was most qualified, Brooks continued, because he got certain augments during childhood, and he got those augments because you chose a certain line of work with certain risks, and one day some asshole with a grudge and a splicer kit took a shot at you and hit him instead. You think it's your fault that some realist fuckwit missed the target. You blame yourself for what happened to your son. It's what parents do.
And you know all about being a parent.
I know about being human, Jim. I know what people tell themselves. You made Siri the man for the job before he was even born. And when the Fireflies dropped in, you had to put him at the top of the list and ship him out. And now all you've got is those goddamned signals. That's your last link, and I understand, man. It's natural. It's human. It's inevitable, because you and I, we haven't got around to cutting those parts out of us yet. But just about everyone else around here has, and we can't afford to ignore that. We can't afford to be distracted. Not here. Not now. He held out his glass and felt a vague and distant kind of relief at how steady his hand was around the crystal. Colonel Jim Moore regarded it for a moment. Looked back at the half-empty bottle.
Bar's closed, he said.
Prey. Of greater concern are the smaller networks pioneered by the so-called bicameral order, which, while having shown no interest in any sort of military or political activism, remains susceptible to weaponization. Although this faction shares tenuous historical kinship with the Dharmic religions behind the Moksha Mind, they do not appear to be pursuing that group's explicit goal of self-annihilation. Each bicameral hive is small enough, hence of sufficiently low latency, to sustain a coherent sense of conscious self-awareness. This would tend to restrict their combat effectiveness, both in terms of response latency and effective size. However, the organic nature of bicameral MHIs leaves them less susceptible to the signal jamming countermeasures that bedevil hard tech networks. From the standpoint of brute military force, therefore, the bicamerals probably represent the greatest weaponization potential amongst the world's extant mind hives. This is especially troubling in light of the number of technological and scientific advances attributable to the Order in recent years, many of which have already proven destabilizing. More. J. 12-03-2088. Hive Minds, Mind Hives, and Biological Military Automata. The Role of Collective Intelligence in Offline Combat. J. Mill Tech. 68-14.
Behold,
I stand at the door and knock. Revelation, chapter 3, verse 20. A sun grown huge, a shadow on its face, a fleck, then a freckle, a dot, a disc, a hole. Smaller than a sunspot, darker, more symmetrical, and then larger. It grew like a perfect tumor, a black planetary disk where no planet could be, swelling across the photosphere like a ravenous singularity. A sun that covered half the void, a void that covered half the sun. Some critical, razor-thin instant passed, and foreground and background had switched places. The sun no longer a disk, but a brilliant golden iris receding around a great dilating pupil. Now it was less than that, a fiery hoop around a perfect starless hole, now a circular thread, writhing, incandescent, impossibly fine. Gone. A million stars winked back into the firmament, cold, dimensionless pinpricks strewn in bands and random handfuls across half the sky, but the other half remained without form and void. And now, the tumor that had swallowed the sun was gnawing outward at the stars as well. Brooks looked away from that great maw and saw a black finger lancing through the starfield directly to port, a dark spire 500 kilometers long, buried deep in the shade. Brooks downshifted his personal spectrum a few angstroms, and it glowed red as an ember, an infrared black body rising from the exact center of the disk ahead. Heat radiator. A hairbreadth from the center of the solar system. It never saw the sun. He tugged nervously at the webbing holding him to the mirror ball. Sengupta was strapped into her usual couch on his left, Liana to his right, Moore to hers. The old warrior had barely said a word to him since Brooks had broached the subject of his son. Some lines were invisible until crossed, apparently. Or maybe they were perfectly visible to anyone who wasn't an insensitive dolt. Empiricists always kept their minds open to alternative hypotheses. He sought refuge in the view outside, dark to naked eyes, but alive on tactical. Icons, momentum vectors, trajectories. A thin hoop of pale emerald shrank across the forward view, drawing tight around the crown's nose, the rim of her reflective parasol. Erased from consensus in deference to an uninterrupted view. Redundant now. Spooling tight into stowage. The Habs had already been folded back and tied down for docking. Beyond the overlays, the crown fell silently past massive structures visible only in their absence, shadows against the sky, the starless silhouettes of gantries and droplet conveyors, endless invisible antennae belied by the intermittent winking of pilot lights strung along their lengths. The crown bucked. Thrusters flared like the sparks of arc welders in the darkness ahead. Down returned, dead forward. Brooks fell gently from the couch into the elastic embrace of his harness, hung there while the crown's incandescent brakes gave dim form to the face of a distant cliff. Girders, the cold, dead cones of dormant thrusters, great stratified slabs of polytungsten. Then the sparks died, and down with them. All that distant topography vanished again. The crown of thorns continued to fall, gently as thistledown.
Looks normal so far, Moore remarked to no one in particular.
Wasn't there supposed to be some kind of standing guard? Brooks wondered. There'd been an announcement anyway, in the weeks after Firefall.
While we have seen no evidence of ill will on the part of blah, 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 prudent to be cautious, yammer, yammer, cannot afford to leave such a vital source of energy undefended in the current climate of uncertainty, yammer, blah.
Moore said nothing. After a moment, Liana took up the slack.
The place is almost impossible to see in the glare unless you know where to look, and there's nothing like a bunch of big, obvious heat prints going back and forth for telling the other guys where to look.
It was as much as she'd said, to Brooks at least, since Valerie had flexed her claws in the hub. He took it as a good sign. More sparks, tweaking the night in split-second bursts. Wire frames crawled all over tactical now, highlighting structures the naked eye could barely discern even as shadows. Constellations ignited on the cliff ahead, lights triggered by the presence of approaching mass, dim and elegant as the photophores of deep-sea fish. Candles in the window to guide travelers home. They rippled and flowed and converged in a monstrous gray lamprey uncoiling from the landscape beneath. Its great round mouth pulsed and puckered and closed off the port bow. One final burst of counterthrust. The lamprey flinched, recoiled a meter or two, resumed its approach. The crown was barely moving now. The lamprey closed on the poor flank and attached itself to the docking hatch.
We are down to fumes. Felching bicams better know what they're doing, because even our chemical just ran dry,
Sengupta reported.
You want this ship to go anywhere now, you gotta get out and push.
Not a problem, Moore said. We're sitting on the biggest charger in the solar system.
Liana looked at Brooks and tried to smile. Welcome to Icarus. Of course, no one was going to fuck on a first date. The sky in the hub began to fill with handshakes and headshots. Icarus and the Crown introducing each other, coming to terms, agreeing that this little rendezvous was an intimate affair that really didn't warrant the involvement of Earthbound engineers. Sengupta whispered sweet nothings to the station's onboard, coaxed it into turning on the lights, booting up life support, maybe sharing a few pages from its diary. Naked bodies floated up from the lower hemisphere. Eulalie and one of the other bicamerals. Hena, Brooks thought. Purged of hostile microbes and decompressed at last, slumming it with the baselines. Nobody seemed to think it worthy of comment.
No one since the last on-site op check,
Sengupta jabbed one finger at a window full of alphanumeric gibberish.
Nobody came or went any time in the last 18 months. Boosters fired 192 days ago to stabilize the orbit, but nothing else.
Sudden, swift movement from the corners of both eyes, the undead in formation, shooting single file through the hatch like raptors diving for a kill. They bounced off the sky, swung around the forward ladder, disappeared through the ceiling, fast and fluid as barracuda.
So much for the pack, Brooks thought nervously. What about the elf?
And didn't finish the question, because the flesh crawling up his backbone had just given him the answer. She was right behind him. For all he knew, she always had been. The bicamerals didn't seem to notice. They hadn't taken their eyes off tactical since they'd arrived. Brooks swallowed and forced his gaze left. He forced himself to turn. He resisted the urge to lower his gaze as Valerie came into view, forced himself to look her right in the eyes. They shone back at him. He gritted his teeth and thought very hard about leucophores and thin film optics, and finally realized, she's not even looking at me. She wasn't. Those bright monster eyes burned a path right past him to the dome behind, shifted and jiggled in microscopic increments to this datum or that image, jittered fast as the eyes of zombies and with twice the intensity. Brooks could almost see the brain sparking behind those lenses, the sheets of electricity soaking up information faster than fiber. It had all of them now, monks and monsters and minions alike, all of them finally brought together under a tiny metal sky, crowded with the machinery of thought, boot sequences, diagnostics, the sprawling, multidimensional vistas of a thousand mechanical senses. It threatened to overflow the hemisphere entirely, a ceaseless, flickering infostorm that reached the equator and started spilling aft as Brooks watched. Crude as papyrus, he realized. All these dimensions, squashed flat and pasted across physical space. It was a medium for cavemen and cockroaches, not these cognitive giants looming on all sides. Why were they even here? Why come together in the land of the blind, when consensus went on forever, arrayed endless intelligence throughout the infinite space within their own heads? Why settle for eyes of jelly, when invisible signals could reach through bone and brain and doodle on the very synapses themselves? Shit, he thought. All that smart paint, so ubiquitous throughout the ship. He'd just assumed it was for ambient lighting and a backup for backups should the implants fail in one of these overclocked brains. But now, it seemed to be their preferred interface. Crude, pointiest, extrinsic. Not completely unhackable, perhaps,
but at least any intrusions would take place outside the head, would compromise the mech and not the meat. At least no alien, imagined or otherwise, would be rewiring the thoughts in the heads of the hive.
A few years to settle in,
Moore had said. A few years for parties unknown to study new and unfamiliar technology, to infer the nature of the softer things behind it. Years to build whatever gears and interfaces an unlimited energy source could provide, and sit back and wait for the owners to arrive. All that time for anything in there to figure out how to get in here. They're afraid, Brooks realized, and then,
shit, they're afraid?
Sengupta threw a row of camera feeds across the dome, holds and service crawlways mainly, tanks for the storage of programmable matter. Warrens of tunnels, where robots on rails slid along on endless missions of repair and resupply. Habs embedded here and there like lymph nodes, vacuoles to be grudgingly pumped full of warmth and atmosphere on those rare occasions when visitors came calling. But barren, uninviting. Barely big enough to stand erect, even if gravity had been an option. Icarus was an ungracious host, resentful of any parasites that sought to take up residence in her gut. Something had done that anyway. Sengupta grabbed that window and stretched it across a fifth of the dome, aux/recomp, according to the feed, a cylindrical compartment with another cylinder, segmented, ribbed, studded with conduits and access panels and eruptions of high-voltage cabling, running through its center like a metal trachea. The view brightened as they watched. Fitful sparks ignited along the walls, caught steady, dimmed to a soft lemon glow that spread across painted strips of bulkhead. Wisps of frozen vapor swirled in weightless arabesques before some reawakened ventilator sucked them away. Brooks had educated himself on the way down. He knew what he'd find if he were to cut that massive windpipe down the middle. At one end, a great black compound eye, a honeycomb cluster of gamma-ray lasers aimed along the lumen of the tube. Pumps and field coils encircled that space at regular intervals. Superconductors, ultra-refrigeration pipes to bring some hypothetical vacuum down to a hairbreadth of absolute zero. Matter took on strange forms inside that chamber. Atoms would lie down, forget about Brown and entropy, take a message from the second law of thermodynamics, and promise to get back to it later. They would line up head to toe and lock into place as a single uniform substrate. A trillion atoms would condense into one vast entity, a blank slate, waiting for energy and information to turn it into something new. Theseus had fed from something a lot like this. Part of the same circuit, in fact. Maybe it was feeding still. And down at the far end of aux/recomp, past the lasers and the magnets and the microchannel plate traps, Brooks could see something else, something wrong. That was all he could tell at first, something just a little bit off about the far end of the compiler. It took a few moments to notice the service port just slightly ajar, the stain leaking from its edges. His brain shuffled through 1,000 cue cards and tried spilled paint on for size, but that didn't really fit. It looked too thick, too blobby for the smart stuff, and he'd seen no other surface painted that oily shade of gray on any of the other feeds. Then someone zoomed the view, and a whole new set of cues clicked into place. Those branching, filigreed edges, like rootlets, like dendrites growing along the machinery.
Is it still coming through?
Liana's voice, a little dazed.
Don't be stupid. You don't think I'd mention it if it was? Wouldn't work anyway. Some idiot left the port open.
But life support had been shut down until the crown had docked, Brooks remembered. Vacuum throughout.
Maybe it was running until you pressurized the habs. Maybe we interrupted it.
Those little pimply lumps, like some kind of early-stage fruiting bodies.
I told you I'd mention it. Jesus, the logs say no juice for weeks.
Assuming we can trust the logs,
Moore said softly.
It almost looks like dumb paint of some kind,
Liana remarked. Brooks shook his head. Looks like a slime mold.
Whatever it is,
Moore said. It's not something any of our people would have sent down, which raises an obvious question. It did, but nobody asked it. Of course, no slime mold could survive in hard vacuum at absolute zero.
Name one thing that can, Moore said.
Deinococcus comes close. Some of the synthetics come closer.
But active?
No, Brooks admitted. They pretty much shut down until conditions improve.
So whatever that is,
Moore gestured at the image,
you're saying it's dormant.
Stranger even than the thing in the window, the experience of being asked for an opinion by anyone on the Crown of Thorns. The mystery lasted long enough for Brooks to glance sideways and see monks and vampire clustered in a multimodal dialogue of clicks and phonemes and dancing fingers. The bicamerals faced away from each other. They hovered in an impromptu knot, each set of eyes aimed out along a different bearing. Jim may be Colonel Super Soldier to me, Brooks realized, but we're all just Capuchins next to those things.
I said...
Sorry, Brooks shook his head. No, I'm not saying that. I mean, look at it. It's outside the chamber. Part of it, anyway. You tell me if there's some way for that machine to assemble matter off the condenser plate.
So it must have grown.
That's the logical conclusion.
In hard vacuum, near absolute zero.
Maybe not so logical. I don't have another answer. Brooks jerked his chin toward the giants. Maybe they do.
It escaped.
If that's what you want to call it, not that it got very far. The stain, or slime mold, or whatever it was, spread less than 2 meters from the open port before petering out in a bifurcation of rootlets. Of course, it shouldn't have even been able to do that much. The damn thing looked alive. As much as Brooks kept telling himself not to jump to conclusions, not to judge alien apparitions by earthly appearance, the biologist was too deeply rooted in him. He looked at that grainy, overblown image, and he didn't see any random collection of molecules. Didn't even see an exotic crystal growing along some predestined lattice of alignment. He saw something organic. Something that couldn't have just coalesced from a diffuse cloud of atoms. He turned to Moore. You're sure Icarus's telematter technology isn't just a wee bit more advanced than you let on? Maybe closer to actual fabbing? Because that looks a lot like complex macrostructure to me. Moore turned away and fixed Sengupta with a stare.
Did it break out? Force open the port?
She shook her head and kept her eyes on the ceiling. No signs of stress or metal fatigue, nothing popped, nothing broken, no bits floating around. Just looks like someone ran a standard diagnostic, took out the sample, forgot to close the door. Pretty dumb mistake, Brooks remarked. Cockroaches make dumb mistakes all the time. And one of the biggest, Brooks did not say, was building you lot. Of course, there's only so much you can see with a camera. You gotta go in there and check, to be sure. Up on the sky, the slime mold beckoned with a million filigreed fingers. So that's the next step, right? Brooks guessed. We board? A grunted staccato from Eulalie, with fingertip accompaniment. From any other primate, it might have sounded like a laugh. The node spared him a look and returned her attention to the dome. It wasn't English. Brooks supposed it wasn't even language, not the way he'd define it, at least. But somehow, he knew exactly what Eulalie had meant. You first. 2 hours later, 4 of the bicamerals and a couple of Valerie's zombies were on the hull, crawling forward along the crown spine with a retinue of maintenance spiders, hauling torches and lasers and wrenches behind them. 2 hours to start making half a ship whole again. 3 days to screw up the courage to go anywhere else. Oh, they laid the groundwork. Sengupta did cam-by-cams of the whole frozen array, hijacked a couple of maintenance bots, and sent them through every accessible corner and cranny. Brooks couldn't make out any angels on the feeds. No asteroids either, for that matter. He was starting to wonder if that codename hadn't been a red herring,
a phrase set loose across the ether so pursuers wouldn't think twice when the Crown relit her engines halfway through the inner Sis and accelerated away to some farther destination. Squinting as hard as she could, Alsen Gupta could see was a small, dark suspicion that disappeared when you laid an error bar across it.
Station allometry's off by a few millimeters, but it'd be weirder if you didn't get shrinkage and expansion with all the heat flux.
The Hive huddled together and passed occasional instructions through Liana. Bring the condenser up 20 atmospheres. Freeze the chamber. Heat the chamber. Turn out the lights. Turn them on again. Vent the condenser back to vacuum. Here, fab this SEM and bot it over. The elephant in the room refused to rise to any flavor of bait. After 3 days, Brooks was itching for action.
They want you to stay here, Liana said apologetically. For your own safety.
They floated in the attic, the Crown's viscera hissing and gurgling about them as a procession of bicamerals climbed into spacesuits at the main airlock. A globe of water, held together by surface tension, wobbled in midair just off the beaten path. The soft light spilling from the lamprey's mouth washed everything in Robin's egg.
Now they're invested in my safety, she sighed.
We've been over this, Dan.
Valerie emerged from the hub and bared her teeth as she sailed past. Her fingers trailed along a bundle of coolant pipes, lightly tapping in a rhythmic tattoo. Brooks glanced at Liana. Liana glanced away. Up the attic, Ofegbu plunged his hands into the water, pulled them out, rubbed them together before donning his gauntlets.
You're going, though, Brooks observed. To work side by side with the creature who had nearly killed her without so much as a glance in her direction.
He'd edged around the subject in casual conversation, what little of that there'd been lately. She hadn't seemed to want to talk about it.
It's my job, she said now. But you know, we're even keeping Jim pretty much in the background.
That surprised him.
Really?
We might bring him over once we're a little more sure of our footing. He was ground control for the Theseus mission, after all. But even then, he'll mostly be remoting in from the Crown. The bicams don't want to expose anyone to unnecessary risk. Besides, she shrugged. What would you do over there anyway?
Brooks shrugged. Watch? Explore? Farther up the hall, the blob shuddered afresh as the node called Jing Shu washed away her sins.
Why do all the bodies do that, he wondered. If there's only one mind behind them all.
You'll get better real-time intel back here.
I guess, he shook his head.
You're right, of course. They're right. I'm just going a bit stir-crazy in here.
I'd have thought you'd want less excitement in your life. The way things have been going lately, boredom's something we should be aspiring to.
She managed to smile, laid a hand on his arm.
You'll be good as there, looking right over my shoulder.
Sengupta grunted from her couch as he drifted back into the hub.
So they won't let you out to play?
They will not, he admitted, and settled in beside her.
Better view from here.
1 foot tapped absently against the deck.
Wouldn't want to be over there anyway, not with that lot. Can't even talk to them. They got shitty manners, in case you hadn't noticed. Wouldn't go over there if you paid me.
Thanks, Brooks said.
For what?
For trying, for the comforting scritch between the ears. Sengupta waved her hand as if spreading a deck of cards. A row of camera windows bloomed left to right across the dome. Gloved hands, visors, the backs of helmets, tactical overlays describing insides and outsides in luminous time series. The lamprey opened its mouth. The bicameral entourage swam innocently down its throat. Brooks pulled on his hood and booted up the motion sensors. He wasn't entirely useless. They set him to work reseeding the astroturf panels, scraping away the dead brittle stuff that had been sacrificed to cold and vacuum on the way down, spraying fresh Nutrigel into the bulkhead planters, spraying, in turn, a mist of microscopic seeds into the gel. The treated surfaces began to green up within the hour, but rather than watch the grass grow, he looked on from a distance while bicams and zombies swarmed across Icarus like army ants, carving great cookie-cutter chunks of polytungsten from its flanks
and hauling them back to that jagged, gaping stump where the crown had been torn in two. Eventually, they let him outside. The array itself was still off limits, but they let him help out closer to home, tutored him in the use of heavy machinery, and set him loose on the crown's hull. He torched pins and struts on command, helped shear the parasol free from its mooring at the bow and haul it aft, helped cut precise holes in its center for improvised thrusters that could stare down the heat of 10 suns. Other times, he sat restlessly in the hub while Sengupta ran numbers across the wall, this many tons and that many kilonewtons and so much ISP thrust. He'd tap into AUX/RECOM and watch Valerie and Ofegbu and Amina at work, scientific and religious paraphernalia floating about their heads as they attempted communion with an impossible slime mold from the stars. He'd capture their movements and their incantations, feed them to a private database he'd been building since before the crown had docked. Sometimes Jim Moore would be there. Other times, Brooks would catch him sequestered in some far-off corner of the crown, adrift on a sea of old telemetry that had nothing to do with his son, nothing at all, just facts on the ground. The colonel was always civil these days, never more. When the sight of people in more productive roles failed to satisfy, Brooks abandoned Icarus's bustling tourist district and went off by himself, cam by cam, stepped through views of empty crawl spaces and frozen halves, an endless dark maze of tunnels connecting the uninhabited and the unexplored. Sometimes there was atmosphere and frost sparkling on bulkheads. Sometimes there was only vacuum and girders and rails along which prehensile machinery scuttled like platelets in a mechanical bloodstream. Once there were stars where no stars should have been, a great hole bitten out of Icarus's carapace where it would do the least damage. Brooks could see incendiary bicameral teeth through the gap, brilliant blue pinpoints taking another bite farther down the hull. Even filtered by the camera, they made him squint. Next stop. Ah, AUX/RECOMP again. More crowded than before. Moore had joined Valerie and the bicamerals at play. Just another roach, Brooks thought. Just like me. But you get a seat at the table just the same. He watched in silence for a few moments. Fuck this! Pale blue light spilled into the attic from the open airlock, limned the edges of pipes and lockers and empty alcoves. Brooks sailed through the hatch, grabbed a strut in passing, swung to port, and into the glowing mouth of the lamprey itself. Eyes hypersaccading in an ebony face, snapping instantly into focus. A body rooted to the airlock wall by one arm, fingers clenched around a convenient handhold. Spring-loaded prosthetics below the knees, they extended absurdly and braced against a bulkhead, blocking Brooks's way. He braked just in time.
Restricted access, sir, the zombie said, eyes dancing once more.
Holy shit! You talk! The zombie said nothing. I didn't think there'd be anyone in there. Brooks tried. Nothing. Are you awake?
No, sir.
So you're talking in your sleep?
Silence, eyes jiggling in their sockets. I wonder if it knows what happened to the other one. I wonder if it was there.
I want to.
You can't, sir.
Will you?
Yes, sir.
Stop me?
Yes, but it won't be necessary, the zombie added.
Brooks had been wondering about lethal force. Maybe best not to push that angle. On the other hand, the thing didn't seem to mind answering questions.
Why do your eye...
To maximize acquisition of high-res input across the visual field, sir.
Huh.
Not a trick the conscious mind could use with its limited bandwidth. A good chunk of so-called vision actually consisted of preconscious filters deciding what not to see, to spare the homunculus upstream from information overload.
You're black, Brooks observed.
Most of you zombies are black. No response.
Does Valerie have a melanin fetid?
I've got this,
Moore said, rising into view through the docking tube. The zombie moved smoothly aside to let him pass.
They talk, Brooks said.
I didn't...
Moore spared a glance at Brooks's face as he moved past. Then he was back on board and heading aft.
Come with me, please.
Where?
R&M. Freckle on your face I don't like the look of.
Moore disappeared into the hub. Brooks looked back at the airlock. Valerie's sentry had moved back into place, blocking the way to more exotic locales.
Thanks for the chat, Brooks said. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Close your eyes.
Brooks obeyed. The insides of his lids glowed brief, bloody red as Moore's diagnostic laser scanned down his face.
Word of advice,
the colonel said from the other side.
Don't tease the zombies.
I wasn't teasing him. I was just chat.
Don't chat with them either.
Brooks opened his eyes. Moore was running his eyes down some invisible mid-air diagnostic.
Remember who they answer to, he added.
I can't imagine that Valerie forgot to swear her minions to secrecy.
And I can't imagine her minions will forget to tell her any secrets you might have asked about, whether they answered or not.
Brooks considered that. You think she might take offense at the melanin fetish remark?
I have no idea, Moore said quietly. I sure as hell did.
Brooks blinked.
You look at them.
There was liquid nitrogen in the man's voice.
You see, zombies, fast on the draw, good in the field, less than human, less than animals, maybe, not even conscious. Maybe you don't even think it's possible to disrespect something like that. Like disrespecting a lawnmower, right?
No,
Let me tell you what I see. The man you were chatting with was called a Zagba. Aza to his buddies. But he gave that up, either for something he believed in, or because it was the best of a bad lot of options, or because it was the only option he had. You look at Valerie's entourage and you see a cheap joke. I see the 70-odd% of military bio-auts recruited from places where armed violence runs so rampant that non-existence as a conscious being is actually something you aspire to. I see people who got mowed down on the battlefield and then rebooted, just long enough to make a choice between going back to the grave or paying off the jumpstart with a decade of blackouts and indentured servitude, and that's pretty close to the best-case scenario.
What would be the worst case?
Some jurisdictions still hold that life ends at death, Moore told him. Anything else is an animated corpse, in which case a Zagba has exactly as many rights as a cadaver in an anatomy class.
He stabbed the air and nodded.
I was right. It's precancerous.
Malawi, Brooks remembered. That's why you took her on, he realized. Not for me, not for Sengupta, not even for the mission, because she killed one of your own. Moore looked right through him.
I would have thought that by now you'd have learned to keep your attempts at psychoanalysis to yourself.
He extracted a tumor pencil from the first aid kit.
Any nausea? Headaches? Dizziness? Loose stools?
Brooks brought his hand to his face. Not yet.
Probably nothing to worry about, but we'll run a complete body scan just to be safe. Could be internal lesions as well.
He leaned in, pressed the pencil against Brooks's face. Something electrical snapped in Brooks's ear. A sudden tingling warmth spread out across his cheek.
I'd recommend daily scans from here on in, Moore said. Our shielding on approach wasn't all it could have been.
He gestured for Brooks to move to the right. Unfolded the med bed from the wall.
I have to admit I'm a bit surprised this started so soon, though. Maybe you had a pre-existing condition.
He stood aside.
Lie back.
Brooks maneuvered himself over the pallet. Moore strapped him into place against the freefall. A biomedical collage bloomed across the bulkhead.
Jim?
The soldier kept his eyes on the scan.
Sorry.
Moore grunted.
Perhaps I shouldn't have expected you to be so fast on the uptake.
He paused,
It's not as though you're some kind of zombie.
Roaches, you know. We fuck up, Brooks admitted.
Yes. I forget that sometimes.
The colonel took a breath, let it out, softly, through clenched teeth.
Before you showed up, I... well...
Brooks waited in silence, fearful of tipping some scale.
It's been a while, Moore said, since I've had much call to deal with my own kind.
God created the natural numbers. All else is the work of man. Leopold Kronecker.
Got something for you?
It was a white plastic clamshell, about the size and shape to hold a set of antique eyeglasses. Liana had fabbed a bright green bow and stuck it to the top. Brooks eyed it suspiciously.
What is it?
The face of God, she declared,
and then, deflated by the look he shot at her.
That's kind of what the Hive's calling it anyway. Piece of your slime mold.
She held it out with a flourish.
If Muhammad can't come to the sample.
Thanks. He took the offering. Try as he might, he couldn't keep from smiling. And set it on the table, next to dessert.
They thought you'd like to take a shot at, you know, seeing what makes it tick.
Brooks glanced at a bulkhead window, where three bicamerals floated at the compiler, their gazes divergent, as was their wont. Not any Sengupta aversion to eye contact, he'd come to realize, just the default preference for a 360-degree visual field, adopted by a collective with eyes to share.
Are they throwing me a bone, or do they just want someone expendable doing the dissections? A bone, maybe. But you know, this thing does have certain biological properties, and you are the only biologist on board.
Roach biologist? And that slime mold's got to be post-biological if it's anything at all. And you know as well as I do that I've got better odds of getting a blowjob from Valerie than...
He caught himself, too late. Idiot. Stupid. Insensitive.
Maybe not, Leona said, after a pause so brief it might have been imaginary. But you're the only one in the neighborhood with a biologist's perspective.
You think that makes a difference?
Sure. More to the point, I think they do, too.
Brooks thought about that.
I'll try not to let them down, then.
And then.
Lee, so what are you doing here, anyway?
She leaned in for a closer look at his display.
You're running mocap.
He nodded, wary of speech.
What for? Slimy hasn't moved since we got here.
He shrugged and confessed.
I'm watching the bicams.
She raised an eyebrow.
I've been trying to figure out their methodology, he confessed. Everyone's got to have one, right? Scientific or superstitious or just some weird gut instinct. There's at least got to be some kind of pattern. You're not finding one?
Sure I am. They're rituals. Eulalie and Ufegbu raise their hands just so. Chorovska howls at the moon for precisely 3.5 seconds. The whole lot of them throw their heads back and gargle, for fuck's sake. The behaviors are so stereotyped, you'd call them neurotic if you saw them in one of those old labs with the real animals in cages. But I can't correlate them to anything else that happens. You'd think there'd be some kind of sequence, right? Try something. If that doesn't work, try something else. Or just follow some prescribed set of steps to chase away the evil spirits.
Liana nodded and said nothing.
I don't even know why they bother to make sounds, he grumbled. That quantum callosum, or whatever they have, has got to be faster than any kind of acoustic.
Don't spend too much effort on that, Liana told him. Half those phonemes are just a side effect of booting up the hyperparietals.
Brooks nodded.
Plus, I think the Hive fragments sometimes, you know? Sometimes I think I'm looking at one network, sometimes two or three. They drop in and out of sync all the time. I'm correcting for that. Trying to, anyway. But I still can't get any correlations that make sense. He sighed. At least with the Catholics, you know that when someone hands you a cracker, there's going to be wine in the mix at some point.
Liana shrugged, unconcerned.
You gotta have faith. You'll figure it out, if it's God's will.
He couldn't help himself. Jesus Christ, Lee. How can you keep saying that? You know there's not the slightest shred of evidence.
Really? In an instant, her body language had changed. Suddenly, there was fire in her eyes.
And what kind of evidence would be good enough for you, Dan?
Voices in the clouds? Fiery letters in the sky proclaiming, I am the Lord thy God, you insignificant weasel? Then would you believe?
He held up his hands, reeling in the face of her anger. Lee, I didn't mean...
Oh, don't back down now. You've been shitting on my beliefs since the day we met. The least you can do is answer the goddamn question.
Well, probably not, he had to admit. The first thought that fiery skywriting would bring to his mind would be hoax or hallucination. God was such an absurd proposition at its heart that Brooks couldn't think of any physical evidence for which it would be the most parsimonious explanation. Hey, you're the one who keeps talking about the unreliability of human senses. It sounded feeble, even to himself. So no evidence could ever change your mind. Tell me how that doesn't make you a fundamentalist.
The difference, he said slowly, feeling his way, is that brain hack is an alternate hypothesis entirely consistent with the observed data, and Occam likes it a lot more than omnipotent sky wizard.
Yeah, well, the people you're putting under your nanoscope know a thing or two about observed data, too, and I'm pretty sure their publication record kicks yours all over the intersys. Maybe you don't know everything. I gotta go.
She turned to the ladder, gripped the rails so hard her knuckles whitened, stopped, unclenched a little, turned back.
Sorry, I just...
S'okay, he told her. I didn't mean to, well... Except he had, of course. They both had. They'd been doing this dance the whole trip downhill. It just hadn't seemed so personal before.
I don't know what got into me, Liana said.
He didn't call her on it. It's okay. I can be kind of a brainstem sometimes. She tried on a smile.
Anyhow, I do have to go.
We're good? We're good. She climbed away, smile still fastened to her face, bent just slightly to the left, favoring ribs that medical technology had long since completely healed. He wasn't a scientist. Not to these creatures. He was a baby and a playpen, an unwelcome distraction to be kept busy with beads and rattles while the grown-ups convened on more adult matters. This gift Liana had brought him wasn't a sample. It was a pacifier. But by all the laws of thermodynamics, it did its job. Brooks was hooked at first sight. He pulled the GIMP hood over his head, linked into the lab's consensus channel, and time just stopped. It stopped, then shot ahead in an instant. He threw himself down through orders of magnitude, watched molecules in motion, built stick figure caricatures, and tried to coax them into moving the same way. He felt distant surprise at his own proficiency, marveled at how much he'd accomplished in just a few minutes, wondered vaguely why his throat felt so dry, and somehow 18 hours had passed.
What are you? He thought in amazement.
Not computronium, anyway. Not organic. More like a Tistovich plasma helix than anything built out of protein. Things that looked like synaptic gates were ticking away in there to the beat of ions. Some carried pigment as well as electricity. Like chromatophores moonlighting as associative neurons. Trace amounts of magnetite, too. This thing could change color if it ran the right kind of computations. Not much more computational density than your garden-variety mammalian brain, though. That was surprising. And yet, the way it was arranged. He resented his own body for needing water, ignored the increasing need to take a piss until his bladder threatened to burst. He built tabletop vistas of alien technology and shrank himself down into their centers, wandered, thunderstruck through streets and cityscapes and endlessly shifting lattices of intelligent crystal. He stood humbled by the sheer impossibility held in that little fleck of alien matter, and by the sheer mind-boggling simplicity of its execution.
It was as though someone had taught an abacus to play chess. It was as though someone had taught a spider to argue philosophy.
"You're thinking," he murmured, and couldn't keep an amazed smile off his face.
It actually did remind him of a spider, in fact. One particular genus that had become legendary among invertebrate zoologists and computational physicists alike. A problem solver that improvised and drew up plans far beyond anything that should have been able to fit into such a pinheaded pair of ganglia. Portia, the eight-legged cat, some had called it. The spider that thought like a mammal. It took its time, mind you. Sat on its leaf for hours, figuring out the angles without ever making a move. And then, zap, closed on its prey along some roundabout route that broke line of sight for minutes at a time. Somehow it hit every waypoint, never lost track of the target. Somehow it just remembered all those three-dimensional puzzle pieces with a brain barely big enough to register light and motion. As far as anyone could tell, Portia had learned to partition its cognitive processes, almost as if it were emulating a larger brain piece by piece, saving the results of one module to feed into the next. Slices of intellect, built and demolished one after another. No one would ever know for sure. A rogue synthophage had taken out the world's salticids before anyone had gotten around to taking a closer look, but the Icarus slime mold seemed to have taken the same basic idea and run with it. There'd be some upper limit, of course. Some point at which scratch pads and global variables took up so much room, there'd be none left over for actual cognition. But this was just a fleck. This was barely the size of a ladybug. The condenser chamber was awash in the stuff. What had Liana called it? God. The face of God. Maybe, Brooks thought. Give it time.
Scale invariant shit, it timeshares!
He'd almost gotten used to it by now. Barely even jumped at the sound of Rakshi Sengupta exclaiming unexpectedly at his side. He peeled the hood back, and there she was, a meter to his left. Eavesdropping on his models through an ancillary bulkhead feed. He sighed and nodded. Emulates larger networks a piece at a time. That one little piece of Portia could...
Portia!
Sengupta stabbed the air, stabbed consensus.
After the spider, right?
Yeah, that one little piece could probably model a human brain if it had to. He pursed his lips.
I wonder if it's conscious. No chance. It'd take days just to chug through a half-second brain slice, and networks only wake up.
Right, he nodded.
Of course.
Her eyes jiggled, and another window sprouted off to one side. Aux/recomp, and the post-biological wonder painted on its guts.
Bet that could be, though. What else you got?
I think it was designed specifically for this kind of environment, Brooks said after a moment.
What, space stations?
Empty space stations. Smart mass isn't anything special, but something this small, running cognition-level computations, there's a reason you don't run into that a lot on Earth. Sengupta frowned.
'Cause being 1,000 times smarter than the thing that's trying to eat you isn't much help if it takes you a month to be 1,000 times smarter.
Pretty much. Glacial smarts only pay off if your environment doesn't change for a long time. Of course, it's not such a bottleneck at higher masses, but... Well, I think this was designed to work no matter how much or how little managed to sneak through, which implies that it's optimized for telematter dispersal. Although if it isn't using our native protocols, how it hijacks the stream in the first place is beyond me.
Oh, they figured that out a couple days ago, Sengupta told him. Really? Fuckers. Know how when you pack a layer of ball bearings into the bottom of a crate and the second layer fits into the bumps and valleys laid down by the first and the third fits onto the second so it all comes down to the first layer? First layer determines all the turtles all the way up, right?
Brooks nodded.
Like that, except the ball bearings are atoms. You're shitting me. Yeah, because I got nothing better to do than play tricks on roaches. But that's like laying down a set of wheels and expecting it to act as a template for a car. More like laying down a set of treadmarks and expecting it to act as a template for a car. Come on. Something has to tell the nozzles where to squirt that first layer. Something has to tell the second layer of atoms when to come through so that they can line up with the first. Might as well call it magic and be done with it.
You call it magic. Hive calls it the face of God. Yeah, well, the tech may be way beyond us, but superstitious labels aren't bringing it any closer.
Oh, that's rich. You think God's a thing. God's not a thing.
I've never thought God was a thing, Brooks said.
Good, because it's not. It's water into wine. It's life from clay. It's waking meat.
Sweet smoking Jesus. Not you, too. He summed it up to move it along.
So God's a chemical reaction. Sengupta shook her head. God's a process.
Fine. Whatever. But she wasn't letting it go.
Everything's numbers you go down far enough, don't you know?
She poked him, pinched his arm.
You think this is continuous? You think there's anything but math?
He knew there wasn't. Digital physics had reigned supreme since before he'd been born, and its dictums were as incontrovertible as they were absurd. Numbers didn't just describe reality. Numbers were reality. Discrete step functions smoothing up across the Planck length into an illusion of substance. Roaches still quibbled over details, doubtless long since resolved by precocious children who never bothered to write home. Was the universe a hologram or a simulation? Was its boundary a program or merely an interface? And if the latter, what sat on the other side, watching it run? A few latter-day religions had predictably answered that question with the names of their favorite deities, although Brooks had never been entirely clear on what an omniscient being would need a computer for. Computation, after all, implied a problem not yet solved, insights not yet achieved. There was really only one sort of program for which foreknowledge of the outcome didn't diminish the point of the exercise, and Brooks had never been able to find any religious orders that described God as a porn addict. So, the laws of physics were the OS of some inconceivable supercomputer called reality. At least that explained why reality had a resolution limit. Planck length and Planck time had always looked a bit too much like pixel dimensions for comfort. Past that, though, it had always seemed like angels dancing on the head of a pin. None of it changed anything way up here where life happened. And besides, positing universe as program didn't seem to answer the big questions so much as kick them down the road another order of magnitude. Might as well just say that God did it after all, head off the infinite regress before it drove you crazy. Still. A process, Brooks mused. That sounded more modest, at least. He wondered why Liana had never spelled it out during their debates. Sengupta's head bobbed.
What kind of process, though, that's the question. Master algorithm defining the laws of physics or some demon reaching up to break 'em?
Her eyes flickered briefly toward his, flickered away at the last instant.
That's how we know it exists in the first place. Miracles.
Miracles.
Impossible events, physics violations.
Such as?
Star formation way below the Z limit. Photons doing things they're not supposed to the meta rules changing over by the Cloverleaf Nebula. They've indicated the Smolin model or something. I don't know, it's beyond me, so you'd never get it in a million years, but they found something impossible, way down deep.
A miracle.
I think more than one, but that's what I said.
Wait a second, Brooks frowned. If the laws of physics are part of some universal operating system, and God, by definition, breaks them, you're basically saying,
don't stop now, Roach, you're almost there.
You're basically saying God's a virus?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
Portia iterated before them. What was it Liana had said? We've always thought C and friends ruled supreme, out to the quasars and beyond. What if they're just some kind of local ordinance? What if they're a bug, he murmured. Sengupta grinned and stared at his wrist.
Change the whole mission, wouldn't it?
This mission?
Bicameral mission, the mission of the whole order. Reality's iterating everywhere, but there are these inconsistencies. Maybe not the right reality, Change alpha just a bit, and the universe stops supporting life. Maybe alpha's wrong. Maybe life's just a parasitic offshoot of a corrupted OS.
Somewhere in Brooks's head, a penny dropped. For 15 billion years, the universe had been shooting for maximum entropy. Life didn't throw entropy into reverse. Nothing did. But it put on the brakes, even as it spewed chaos out the other end. The gradient of life was the first scale any aspiring biologist learned to sing. The further you kept yourself from the thermodynamic equilibrium, the more alive you were. It's the anthropic principle's evil twin, he thought. What
What is this mission exactly? Brooks asked softly. Sengupta rocked gently back and forth.
They know God exists already, that's old. I think now they're trying to figure out what to do with it.
What to do with God?
Maybe worship, maybe disinfect.
The word hung there, reeking of blasphemy.
How do you disinfect God?
Brooks said after a very long time.
Don't ask me, I just fly the ship.
Her gaze slid back to the bulkhead, to the church of Aux/Recomp and the alien emissary there.
I think that puppy's giving them some ideas, though, she said.
Liana Luderode was lost in inner space when he sailed through the commons ceiling. She blinked as he bounced off the deck, shook her head. Her eyes came back to the here and now as a courtesy window opened on the bulkhead, a flat-screen concession to the neurologically disabled. Icarus, the confessional, a rosette of space-suited monks, outward-facing, visors raised to bare their souls before the face of God.
Hi,
Brooks said carefully. She nodded around a mouthful of couscous.
Rakshi says you made some serious headway, even gave it a name.
He nodded. Portia, it's pretty amazing, it... Her gaze drifted back to the window. She can't take her eyes off them, he thought, just as she did and caught him looking.
What?
It's not just amazing, he told her. It's actually kind of scary. He dipped his chin at the feed.
And they cut pieces out of it. They take samples, Liana said. Almost like real scientists.
Something that reaches down across half a light year and makes our own machines do backflips around the laws of physics.
Not like they can get all the answers by just staring at it all day.
I thought that was exactly how they got their answers.
They know what they're doing, Dan.
That's one hypothesis. Want to hear another?
I'm not sure.
Ever hear of induced thanoperoresis? He asked.
Uh-huh.
Liana shrugged. Common procedure among the augmented. Keeps him from collapsing into existential angst.
It's a bit more fundamental than that, Brooks said.
Have you got it?
Thanoperoresis? Course not.
Are you going to die?
Eventually. Hopefully not for a while.
Good to know, Brooks told her. Because if you were a victim of ITP, you wouldn't be able to answer that question. You might not even have heard it.
Dan, I don't...
You and I, raising his voice over hers, we're blessed with a certain amount of denial. You admit you're going to die. You even know it intellectually on some level, but you don't really believe it. You can't. The thought of dying is just too damn scary. So we invent some fairyland heaven to take us in after we pass on, or we look to your friends and their friends to give us immortality on a chip, or, if we're hardcore realists, we just pay lip service to death and decay and keep right on feeling immortal anyway. But some folks, he nodded at the feed, just get too damn smart. They put their heads together and develop insights way too deep to paper over with a few million years worth of whistling past the graveyard. People like that would know they were going to die. They'd feel it in the gut. They'd know what death means in a way you or I never could. And the only way they can keep from collapsing into whimpering puddles is to give denial a hand, cut a cognitive hole into the middle of their heads. We may live in denial most of the time, but those people, they didn't even show a fright response when it looked like their whole damn hive was an hour from the morgue. Like those agnosiacs who'd die of thirst in their own homes after some tumors destroyed their ability to recognize water.
I don't think they're like that, Liana said softly.
Sure you do. You told me as much, remember? Reset the sensory biases. Randomize the errors. They watched in silence as the hive poked a stick at something dangerous. A lot of them died, not so long ago, Brooks said after a while.
I remember.
Me too. And you know what I remember the most? You know what I can't forget? Luckett. Rolling around in his own shit while his spinal cord shorted out, smiling and insisting that everything was going according to plan. Liana turned away, eyes bright.
I liked him. He was a good man.
I wouldn't know. All I know is, he sounded just like every hapless Yahweh junkie who ever looked around at all the horror and injustice in the world and mumbled some shit about how it's not the place of the clay to question the potter. The only difference is that everyone else lays it all on God's master plan, and your bicamerals talk about their own.
You're wrong. They don't think of themselves that way at all.
Then maybe you shouldn't either. Maybe you shouldn't have quite so much faith.
Dan, shut the fuck up. You don't know anything about it. You can't know.
I was there, Lee. I saw you. They've got you so convinced they're infallible. They've got everything so factored five ways to Sunday that you didn't even need a hole cut into your brain. You went straight into the lion's den without missing a beat. You got right up in Valerie's face, and it didn't occur to you for a microsecond that she's your goddamn predator. She could rip your throat out without even thinking about it.
Do not put that on them.
Liana's voice was flinty. That was my mistake. Tinadoom was... I will not let you blame anyone else for my stupidity.
Isn't that the way, though? Isn't that how it's always been? Just obey the guys in the funny hats, and if it's a win, it's all praise be to Allah. But if your ass gets kicked, it's your fault? You read scripture the wrong way. You weren't worthy. You didn't have enough faith.
Some of the fight seemed to bleed out of her then. Some of the old Liana Luderote peeked through. She sighed and shook her head and ghosted a smile.
Hey, remember when this used to be fun?
He spread his hands, feeling helpless.
I just... You mean well. I know. But after all you've seen, you can't deny how far ahead of us they are.
Oh, they're scary smart. I'll give them that. They run circles around the best roaches we can throw at them. They snap this ship like a twig and pitch it all the way to the sun, drop us dead center onto Icarus's dark side from 100 million kilometers with barely a thruster tweak. But they glitch, just like we do. They still wash away their sins, because after all that rewiring, their brains still mix up sensation and metaphor. They're more glitchy than we are, because half their upgrades are barely out of beta. And while we're on the subject, has anyone factored in the neuropsychologic impairment that a few weeks of hyperbaric exposure must be inflicting on all that extra brain tissue?
Liana shook her head.
We're not on the steps anymore, Dan. We don't measure success by how far you can throw a spear in a crosswind. They think rings around us in every way that matters.
Uh-huh. And Masaso and Luckett are still dead. And all that poor bastard could cling to while his lights went out was that it was all according to plan.
He put his hands on her shoulders.
Lee, it's not just that these people can't wrap their heads around mortality. They can't even entertain the possibility they could be wrong. If that doesn't scare the shit out of you.
She shook him off.
The plan was to get us to Icarus. Here we are.
Here we are.
Brooks pointed to a hole in the wall, where a hived demigod communed with something that could change the laws of physics. And how does it feel to know our lives depend on the judgment of something that can't even imagine it could die?